Welcome to Double Cross Radio. We are live from the Jefferson Republic. I'm your host, Drew Lamb. I am joined tonight by my co-host and good friend, Chuck Horton. And tonight we are honored to have a very special guest return to the show, Anthony Antiso. Anthony Antiso is spearheading what I consider to be the most important thing going on in this country. And Mr. Antiso is pushing for the Jefferson Republic, also, well, now known as the Siskiyou Republic. And this is quite a bit different than another plan to create the state of Jefferson. We've discussed this several times on the show. And what the Republic movement is all about is actually resetting the government, replacing government on a county level and basically restoring constitutional government. And so what this does is it resets all those laws, rules, regulations, revised statutes, administrative rules, government agencies, and so on and so forth, and puts the power back in the hands of the people, and they could decide how they want to live their lives. And, you know, I suppose that if people want to have more government again, they could go ahead and do that. But I doubt that that'll be the case in Siskiyou County. Tony, welcome back to the show. It was really great to hear your voice today and to chat with you a little bit. And, you know, we've got a lot of ground to cover on this.
Okay.
So we had this petition initiative this year, and so the people of Siskiyou County, California, were able to vote as to whether they wanted to create this Jefferson Republic, and they came really close to pulling it off. I think it just failed by what I heard was a 5% margin.
That's correct. Yes,
it was very, very close. And so I and others, you know, Gary Lake, he couldn't join us tonight, but, you know, we've just been pretty wound up after that and wanted to just keep pushing this forward and to give it another try, because I think we're going to pull this off. And this time around, it's a little bit different. You know, it's going to be called the Siskiyou Republic. And I think that's good. And that, it gets us away from the state of Jefferson, and so people don't get it confused with that movement. And also, it gets us away from the problematic title that we had last time around with the territory,
exactly.
which was just more of a boundary description than a technical term to create a territory. That's not what the people of Siskiyou County were trying to accomplish. And so here we go again with so we have to get this ballot initiative going, right?
Yes. And, okay. Maybe I should, for the listeners, just embellish a little more on why. Well, you did touch on it, why we changed the name. And that was, as you said, to clear up any confusion with the other movement so that people understand what we're doing, because the other movement does not start a new constitutional government. But anyway, we felt that if we could get the vote done here in Siskiyou County, then that's why we would call it the Siskiyou Republic, and then go to the next county. And let's say you folks up there in Oregon wanted to have a ballot initiative to do the same thing, which you can legally do in Oregon. You could call it Jackson County, Josephine County, or Josephine or Jackson Republic if you wanted, or Jefferson, really, whatever the people choose. Mm-hmm. And then we would hope eventually, as it spread through the adjacent counties, we would then form, much like the Founding Fathers did, Articles of Confederation or a Memorandum of Understanding, to put it another way, where we would decide how to bring ourselves together under one umbrella for beneficial purposes.
Yes. So, you know, I've discussed this before on this show, where I've often felt that I prefer the Articles, you know, Confederation, you know, and a lot of people are like, what are you, un-American or something? I'm like, no, I'm not at all. Have you read them?
Yeah, they were a superior document.
Yeah, exactly. And, there are some people that I've been talking to in Jackson County and Josephine County that would like to get something rolling, you know, like this on their own. And I encourage them to just, you know, put their energy behind Siskiyou County so that we can make this the model, you know, and make this work, get this going. It takes an enormous amount of work. You know, there's going to be signatures that have to be gathered, and we have to hit the streets and talk to people and hand out flyers and hold events and all this stuff. And it's a lot of work, and it takes some money, and I don't want people in the local liberty movement to squander their resources, you know. So
no.
I'd really encourage people to rally behind Siskiyou. Do whatever you can to help us push this forward. I'm in Jackson County. Chuck's in Jackson County, Oregon, and I know that we would move there. I know I would.
Yeah, it's just it'd be easy for me.
Yeah,
you know what? If Jackson County goes, I want to have dibs on Rothbard Republic. Just wanted to throw that in. Sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
You're fine.
It's fine. But I think if we make Siskiyou the model, and then if people want to start doing this where they live, you know, then we go, okay, see, we made this work, and then they could get, you know, guidance from people like you and others that have been.
Well, I'll be happy. Yes, I'll be happy to. Pardon me. I'm sorry. I'll be happy to go anywhere I can at any time and talk to the people and show them what we've done when they're ready to do it.
So, Tony, let's get into this again. You know, so we have new listeners, people that haven't heard this before, don't understand where we're coming from with this. Is this secession? Is this the creation of a new country? How can you do such a thing? Are you committing treason?
Okay. Yes, I understand. And we did get a lot of that type of question when we started this before last year. And maybe, if I could, we've developed a newsletter titled The Mountain Patriot News that we are going to start a series of articles. And to answer your question about, are we anti-American? Are we trying to secede, or what are we trying to do? I think before we answer that directly? The answer is no, of course, but there's a lot of people I have found don't understand where the authority for government comes from. And if I might take a minute to just go through very quickly on this first issue of the Mountain Patriot News, I think it might help explain it. Would that be okay?
Tony, you've got the floor for as long as you want it.
Okay. All right. We have an article in here entitled, Why Do We Need to Reestablish? And that's a key word, reestablish a constitutional republic form of government. Because it's been taken over and subverted by private corporations, and we are being governed by those private corporations. So, okay, how do we reestablish it? Can we go to Washington, D.C. and do it? I don't think so. So where do we start? We start at the local level, and we hopefully grow from there, because even though the founding fathers had a totally undeveloped country they were in, they had their 13 colonies, they started in the beginning within each one of them and then drew up those Articles of Confederation. So we need to do the same thing. Okay, and for people to understand what is a republic and where does the authority come from, I'd like to cover some principles of liberty and ask those listeners, what does liberty mean to you? How does it apply to your everyday life? As defined in Webster's, it's freedom from oppression and domination, generally from a government or a private corporation. Freedom and liberty is your ability to go about your life and better your situation and your family. But before you can assert your freedom and liberty, you need to understand where it comes from and upon what principles apply to it. Because with liberty comes moral responsibility to use that liberty without infringing on another's person's liberty. The day you were born, each of us, our Creator gave us inalienable rights, some of which are freedom and liberty. That means you are a sovereign person. Definition of the word sovereign is one who possesses supreme authority. Okay, man, because those rights were born, you were born with, are inherent, that's a key word, inherent and unique to each of us, no one can take them away from us. No one. You only lose them when you don't use them. Kind of a phrase there. They are part of you. They're part of your soul and your nature. So how does government get its authority? Think about it for a minute. If you have inherent, inalienable rights, and no one can take them from you, then where does the government get it? So the only reliable basis for government as it relates to all of us is that government gets its authority from us based on that moral, natural law given us by our Creator. Does that make sense, Drew?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Here are several principles of moral natural law that are needed to maintain liberty. The right of government to govern is vested in all the people, not the elected. 2, the people can and have authority to alter and or abolish the government when it becomes an oligarchy, democracy, or any other form of government. And by the way, that's what we have today, I believe, is an oligarchy democracy.
I agree.
Liberty, number 3, liberty is only secure if the right of private property is secure. A free people can only be free when governed by law and not the whims of the elected. And that's what we have today. We vote for someone and they're supposed to go back there and do what we ask them to do, but that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Free people cannot survive under a constitutional republic unless the government, unless they remain morally strong. Mm-hmm. Our nation was founded and a constitution was completed all upon moral natural law. This is the same as a principle of common law. Part of our problem is the courts, as everyone or a lot of people know. Our courts used to be based on constitutional common law. those courts no longer exist. They are statutory, or if you want, case law, corporate courts. There used to be two types of courts in the beginning, one of law and one of equity. They were merged into a statutory court as exists today. And in the court of equity, usually the decision arrived by the judge was beneficial to both parties. It wasn't what the law said, is what was good to resolve the situation before the court that day. That's what the court of equity did. But attorneys can't make a lot of money under that system. Okay, human beings are obligated to follow the natural law if they truly wish to be free and have liberty. All of mankind and womankind were created equal, but not the same. And as the French say, vive la différence. In all other matters in life, such as social and employment obligations, both should be treated equal. But that can only happen in a true free society, a republic form of government, not a democracy. Mm-hmm. The role of government is to protect those rights, not to provide things equally. It's not the government's role to decide what is equal, but rather the people. If you think about it, go back in time and consider what government actions were taken when new laws were passed. Someone's rights were taken away to be given to someone else.
Right.
This is an example of a democracy or an oligarchy. Mm-hmm. Going back to a republic will not cost you anything. It will not cause anyone to lose their benefits. But rather, think about it. If you're on, I'm on Social Security because of my age. I'm almost 79. But rather, it will give you more choice and more voice in those benefits you get. So we have to reestablish our republic form of government, and then we can truly be free people. That's part of what's in that newsletter that we're going to send once we get it put together.
I better subscribe to that.
Well, it's free. The first issue is going to be free. We're building little newsstands, and we're going to go around to all the businesses and see who wants to put the little, it's about the size of a large computer screen, mm-hmm. In like about maybe a 14 by 8, and it will support a whole bunch of issues, and we're going to see what businesses would like to have them on their counters. And so anyway...
Is there a website?
We still have the same website we had before. And boy, all of a sudden it escapes me.
Okay, so we had jeffersonrepublic.org.
Yes, that's it. That's it.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
But, of course, we're not seceding. We're reestablishing. We're reaffirming our allegiance to the United States of America. And that really became apparent to me when I decided, some people are asking me to run for city council here. So I gave in and I signed up. And when I had to take the oath as a candidate, they don't have an oath. And I looked this up. Anyone elected to office today does not pledge their... Not pledge, I'm sorry. Do not take their oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America. They take it to hold up the corporate United States.
Yes. As well as the federal laws, the state laws and the local laws. And it always seems to come into a conflict with their obligations to the people that elected them.
That's correct. And so when they asked me to take the oath, I took it, but then I added my own sentence, and I said, to the Constitution of the United States of America. And they kind of looked at me like, huh? But we're not seceding. I can't emphasize that enough. We're not going to lose. I'm sorry?
Yes, it's reinstating the constitutional republic and the non-corporate United States.
Correct.
Can you get into that a little bit, you know, that delineation between the two?
Go back in history, and after Lincoln's got in to be the president and after he was assassinated, the nation was in a pretty financial dire straits, and Congress was trying to figure out how to pay the bills. And we can only assume or presume who gave them the idea, but they drafted a new act in 1870.
I think the last name of that guy gave him the idea was Rothschild.
Probably, or maybe the Rockefellers even. they drafted a document, an act, and it was entitled the District of Columbia Act of 1871. And when you go into the records and you look at acts that are passed by Congress, you'll find that at the very beginning they italicize. Mm-hmm. They may let that,
yes,
that fancy writing. Okay, and the reason is that is to identify what the act is for and who passed it. Mm-hmm. So if you go so that it's differentiated from what the act is. So if you looked at the District of Columbia Act of 1871, you will see in there that it says an act to create a new government for the District of Columbia. Hmm. Oh, hold on. The District of Columbia was already under a government. It was under a republic constitutional government. It was part of the Constitution, and it was known as the 10-mile square in the Constitution. Then the colonies passed acts, amendments to the Constitution to name it the District of Columbia and create a governmental form for it, all under the original government. So why are they trying to pass an act for another government?
Right.
Well, you have to read it, but basically that's where the demarcation point was. Mm-hmm. That's when they bifurcated or split off. Mm-hmm. And even in there, it says, in that italicized section, it says this act, under the Congress of the Senate and the House, here be now in session of the United States of America, I don't have it in front of me. I didn't know we were going to get into that today. But anyway,
sorry.
That's okay. That's fine. So then you go to the body of the act, the first paragraph, where it says, and I'm going to paraphrase because I don't remember all of the exact wording, but it says that they hereby create a corporate body and a constitution, and subject to the Constitution of the United States. Well, hold on. They use the United States of America up at the top in the beginning, mm-hmm, go to the body, and they left off America. That was the beginning of the trademark of the name United States as a corporation. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the point at which it happened. So, and that's totally illegal and unconstitutional.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, they did it because the public didn't know. Well, how they kind of smokescreened it was kind of interesting. Andrew Johnson was the president because Lincoln had been assassinated. Johnson was a states rights man, and Congress didn't really like him. And none of the Southern senators were there sitting in their seats at that point in time. So the Congress brought up 11 articles of impeachment against Andrew Johnson, none of which were true or real. And that caused a big stir and kept everybody busy with that while they passed this act. So that's how they kind of diverted attention away from it. Does that sound familiar?
It does. And, you know, Lincoln and all the unconstitutional things that he did during the Civil War kind of paved the road for all this treason to happen, because all the people that were there and were doing things had all just kind of discarded it as a document they were going to, you know, run their country by anymore, and they were, this new thing had to happen, so let's do it. Let's pitch it, and we'll go with this new idea. And that was really the beginning of the end.
Yes, it was. There were a whole lot of other different acts passed after that, but the one that was kind of another, say, maybe the linchpin, in a sense, was the Bretton Woods Agreements Act in 44.
It was after the war ended. I think it was 45.
Right after, probably about, well, they met in Bretton Woods. It was called that because they met in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
There were 44 nations. And the purpose of it was to peg all currencies of the world to gold at $35 an ounce, with the dollar being the reserve currency. Well, Congress went a step further and passed a supplemental act to that, or a statute. I think it's CFR 23-262, if I remember right. And what it said was that the International Monetary Fund, which was created at that time, the World Bank, would have the United States Treasury as its individual drawing account. They quick claimed the assets of this nation to the World Bank. So that's the other part that put us behind the eight ball.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think that that's probably the reason. I don't want to get off on other subjects tonight because we're here to talk about the Siskiyou Republic. But
okay.
I think that was the reason that John F. Kennedy was shot, because he wanted to get out of that deal, and they said no. we own America, and he was gonna, you know, basically throw that document out. And I think that the attempted assassination on Reagan was for the same reason.
Well, I think you're absolutely correct.
These guys are serious. They think they own this country.
Oh, I know. And so consequently, what people have to realize is, and what we said in the beginning, authority begins with each individual, because we're sovereign and we have inherent. Inherent means it's part of us. Nobody can take it away. So that means the government doesn't have the authority. We do, folks. And how do we take it back? Well, we don't secede from our United States of America. We stay with it. And that's what we're doing. We're just bringing it back. See, they cannot do away with the Constitution, because they would have to call a this gets me going. This thing about Convention of States under Article 5, that's, to me, is the worst thing that could ever happen. Because if you read Article 5 in the Constitution carefully, it says specifically, states may propose amendments, but Congress will take over and run that isn't what it says in there, but they will take over and run it. They will be the ones who will be deciding what happens during that convention. The states aren't going to have, they have no more states' rights. So that's a bad idea. So that's why we started this process where we figured we've got to do it by the vote of the people, because the Constitution has one article and one amendment that allows us to do this. And it says in Article 4, Section 4, first of all, that the United States of America shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government, not a republican party, but a republican, republic is what it is, form of government. And the Ninth Amendment, which says basically that if the people decide that they want to retain any right that is other than what's enumerated in the Constitution, they have the right to do that. So we've got legal basis, and then if we take a vote, that makes it even stronger. Have I missed anything?
No, and I think I've always, and I, if I'm not getting this right, you're free to correct me.
Wow.
But I, It kind of is a secession. It kind of isn't. What we're doing is we're seceding from the illegal government and affirming our support and loyalty to the original Constitution.
That's correct. That's what it is. Yes, that's what it amounts to. They split the government in 1871 and created that corporate side. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to break away from that and go back to what they left. Left us. They left us the real government and constitution, but we have to go back to it.
So, where are we at right now? So,
okay,
we want to be able to have a vote again next year.
That's correct.
So the petition initiative process has to begin again.
That's and those steps basically, you can have just one person, but we had five people who were proponents who went and applied for an initiative petition. It was drafted, and then county council has to look at it and see that it's interesting in California. I don't know about Oregon's law, election law, but an initiative petition can be only a single subject. You cannot have more.
I believe that's true in Oregon too.
Probably so. I would guess they're pretty uniform across the United States. So, and that's what's wrong in what happened in Mendocino. They didn't do that anyway.
We'll get to that.
this new initiative petition is even simpler. It says this initiative will create a constitutional republic form of government in order to have more local control and less regulation. Period. That simple. And so there's no qualms about what we're proposing to do.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it very simple. So we're in the process of doing the legal steps to go through all that again.
Mm-hmm. So, how many signatures have to be gathered?
Well, first we have to go back and reapply.
Okay.
In the first go around, we had almost 2,600 signatures. And the criteria to get it on the ballot is the number of registered voters who voted in the last gubernatorial election, which was this year. In our case, in California, in Siskiyou County, there were 13,000 people voted out of 28,000. About half went out to vote, which is pretty poor, I think. But I guess that's pretty good standard by most. So out of 13,000, if we want to get it on the ballot, we have to get 10% of qualified signatures. So that would be roughly a little over 1,300. If you want to it could automatically become a republic, if you got 20%, 2,600 signatures, then the county supervisors have the option to just declare it a done deal and not have to have an election with 20%.
Oh.
Now, I don't think they're going to do that.
Oh, wow.
If we were to get 50%, now that might, and that's what, a little over 6,000?
Mm-hmm.
That, I don't know if that would sway them into wanting to do that or not, to not have an election.
Mm-hmm.
I still think it should be brought before the people, no matter how many signatures you get.
Sure.
So that's the process. We're starting all over, and we'll probably be starting to gather signatures, I'm thinking, right after the first of the year, because there's a time frame. There's a series of events that have to take place. You go in and request the paperwork. You fill it out. You draft the language. The clerk reviews it, sends it to county council. And each one of these steps, they have a time frame they can take to massage it or whatever they want to do. And then county council sends it back and says, yeah, it meets the legal requirements. The clerk certifies that, gives it back to you. You then get your initiative petition forms printed up, and then you go out and get your signatures. So that process can take 30 to 45 days. So that would put us pretty close to the Christmas time.
Uh-huh. Right.
So we're thinking, okay, we get it done by Christmas time, then we'll, because we have 6 months, 180 days, with a possible 30-day extension to gather signatures from the date the initiative petition has been legally posted in a newspaper of general circulation. Mm-hmm. So from that date forward is when your time clock starts to run on gathering signatures.
Who can be a signature gatherer?
Any registered voter.
Ah.
And in California, the clerk has told us that if we have registration forms with us and somebody says, well, I'm not a registered voter, you hand them the form, ask them to register, and there's a registration number on there, and then they can sign the petition immediately upon finishing the completion of that form, and you put that registration number on the petition, and it's a valid signature.
Uh-huh.
So that's a part of it.
Even if they hadn't voted in the last gubernatorial election?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's the exception to it.
Okay.
That they're a new registered voter, but they're allowed to sign the...
Well, that's too bad. If you were just like a completely fed-up voter who didn't want to choose between the lesser of two evils and you didn't vote, then you couldn't sign it, right? Is that
right?
Okay.
Yeah, well, if you were registered... Yeah, well... No, any registered voter can sign the petition. Is it... when the clerk checks it, they check to see if that person voted.
Exactly.
They would probably, yeah, disallow it, except right. The exception of the new voter.
Right. Interesting. Okay. I see. All right.
So, and I think, I'm sure there's probably still people out there wondering why we changed the name, but I think we covered that enough.
Uh-huh. I think it makes perfect sense, actually.
Me too.
Name change. Yeah. And it is, you know, it's a regional thing, and there was a massive amount of confusion, you know, and we all spent a lot of work trying to get people to understand the difference between the State of Jefferson movement and the Jefferson Republic movement, and even I for a while was confused about the Jefferson Republic and the Jefferson Republic territory, and then. But I dug in to understand what was going on, and then I realized there was a disinformation campaign going on to mislead people, and that's when we started talking to you and bringing you on the show to clear this all up.
that's when I got really excited, and I had all these ideas about how freedom could be expressed in the neighboring county to the north of me, and I would want to move there immediately.
Well, yeah. I know, and it's this time we shouldn't have that problem. I hope. I can't imagine. Well, I can't.
I don't think so. No. I don't think we're going to have that. So I think that we have a better shot this time around of making this work. You know.
I just want to interject something if I can, just for a second. I could talk on this for hours. I don't want to. I want to just make hopefully a clear statement. To me, it's very clear that the present state of economic affairs in this country is unsustainable. And one of the I don't know if any of you guys know who Ben Stein is. He had Ben Stein's Money, and I think he's the guy that wrote Ferris Bueller's Day Off, too. I don't know, whatever. His father had an economic law that went like this: if something cannot go on forever, it will stop. And that sounds simple and kind of like it's humorous, but it really is true. And the present state of affairs is not sustainable. And the sooner we disconnect ourselves from that economy and become, even though we're still part of the United States, become more in charge of our own affairs, the better off we're going to be. Because tying ourselves to that ship, it's going down, and you don't want to have your lifeline tied to that. You want to be in a nice sustainable lifeboat that's going to have a prosperous economy, and it's probably going to be best for the United States of America that you love also to have a place where the freedom is really very, very easily attainable, and people and money and capital is all going to flock to this place because they're going to be able to keep more of what is theirs. They're not going to have to support a bloated government and criminal operations and regulatory agencies that steal them through expensive regulations that they have to comply to. And just all those things are going to be better. They probably won't be as perfect as I would like them, but they're going to be better in a Siskiyou Republic than they are now.
And yes, that's true.
And, you know, it's, I don't know where this thing will go, how far it'll go along towards my ideal, but I know this, it's got to be better than the present state of affairs. It wouldn't take very much to improve it a lot.
And to comment, and then I don't want to, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I came across some new, to me, new information. Is anyone out there familiar with the name Karen Hudes? H-U-D-E-S?
Yeah. Yeah, she's a former executive at the World Bank, and then she was fired for being a whistleblower, basically.
Yes. She was actually chief counsel for 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she went, I've got a phone call into her. I hope she calls me back. Just, I want to find out if she'll help us in our effort.
Hey, if you get a hold of her, Tony, see if she'd come on the show. I think she...
That'd be cool.
This would be awesome to tie her in with the World Bank and the because that's those are kind of the people that hold the kind of how the key to our chains.
Yeah, what she said, what really interested me, what it vindicated what I've been saying was the fact that she went to Congress and testified, I think, 4 or 5 times, and she said she got nowhere, and I mean I'm not surprised. You know, she was the talking to the fox in the hen house. But so this person the comment she made that said to me was that the whole system's corrupt from the International Monetary Fund, World Bank, all the way down to our Congress and the White House. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's
exactly what I was pointing out too. This is not, and there is no time in history or point in time in history we can ever point to where a government that has gone this bad, has become corrupt like this, has ever been able to stay sustainable. They always crumble and fall apart. Sometimes it's very quickly, like the Soviet Union did.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes a while and it kind of slowly deteriorates, but it always ends up badly.
Yeah, the pure economics of it just overwhelms them. There's nothing they can do about
it. If you were to use accounting methods like business people are forced to use for the U.S. government, we are over $200 trillion in debt. This is $200 trillion is more than GDP of the whole world.
Exactly. Yeah, amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a debt the whole world cannot repay.
Well, and you made another comment just a second ago about regulation.
Yes.
There's a professor, Philip Hamburg, from... what the heck is that? University back east, where the other whistleblower, the scientist, came from.
MIT?
No, it's on the east coast.
MIT's in Boston, but that's not the one, huh?
Okay. I think this is New Jersey or Maryland or something. Anyway, he's a professor emeritus.
New Jersey is Princeton?
No. Philip Hamburg, professor emeritus in constitutional law. And he did a paper on administrative law as it relates to our Constitution. And the conclusion of the whole thing was that administrative law is unconstitutional, period. And so that's, if you can find this Philip Hamburg, Professor Hamburg's
paper. I'll look for that.
Yeah, you'll find it very interesting. And a little side note on that, one of our committee members was at a meeting in which one of our county supervisors was at. And when they got into the talk about the discussion, the county supervisor, whom we thought was this particular individual, we thought was too far gone to be of any help to us, he said to our committee member, "Have you read Professor Hamburg's paper on administrative law?" member said no, but he said, well, would you please look at it and give me your feedback? So I'm wondering if now this county supervisor is beginning to wake up. I don't know.
A lot of people are starting to wake up because things aren't, despite what they tell you in the media, things aren't getting better.
No. And yes. I think people know it.
It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this stuff out. You just look around. There's about 23 to 25% unemployment in Jackson County, maybe higher among young people, maybe 30-40%.
Yeah, it's even higher if you include government workers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, Tony, this is something you should point out to people. It was pointed out to me, I heard it in a podcast. It wasn't an original thought, but anybody who draws a check from a government source, even if they're employed by the government, is a welfare recipient because they receive more tax benefits than they pay in.
Exactly.
So you should start referring to all these government employees as, we just take your welfare check and, you're living off my dime. You should be bending down and kissing my boots because without my consent and without my voluntary payment of taxes, you would have nothing.
Exactly.
You're just a welfare recipient. And just they need to remember this. They have forgotten this fact. They think they control us, and it's the other way around.
That's the problem. Yeah, part of the problem. On your local news tonight, KTVL channel 10, showed the amount of money a single individual on welfare gets, with no income, no job, no place, no nothing. They get $26,000 a year in combined benefits.
I think it's higher than that.
Well, that's what they put on the
things. Because back in the 90s, it was $30,000, the average person, and they had some reforms, but it didn't lower the amounts. It just made it harder to get on welfare.
Well, that's what they put on tonight. But what really got me was my daughter's working two jobs here in Siskiyou County, and she has, I've helped her raise two sons. A family of three is what got me. They put up there a family of three got $48,000.
Oh, that's how they get the average of $30,000. Yeah, okay.
And I thought to myself, whoa, that's more than what she makes.
That's right. That's a full-time job, $24 an hour.
$48,000? Come on, folks. Well, anyway.
Yeah.
And, the creeping socialism that's out there, that's responsible for our border crisis. People wouldn't be streaming into this country if they all, and if they did, it would be okay because they'd be coming to work. But if they're coming for welfare, they're putting more and more burden on the people who are working.
It's getting worse.
Yeah, and between our really bad drug policy and our socialism through the free schools, free medical, free food stamps, free housing. I mean, who wouldn't want to come here?
Yeah. Oh, speak education. One of our committee members passed something on to me today that I got to look it up and try and find it. But he found who funded Common Core.
Oh.
It's Bill Gates, I bet.
How'd you know? There's no money from our governance, from our federal governance, that's funding Common Core. It's all private corporations.
Wow.
Yeah, Bill Gates is the apple didn't fall far from the tree in that family.
Yeah, he is a corporatocracy.
So his father was a big supporter of the Nazis in World War II.
I'm going to interrupt here so we don't run out of time. I wanted to get into the vote in Mendocino County, California. They created a community bill of rights. And I was bringing this up to you guys today. I wanted to talk about it on the show because I wanted to see if this was something that was similar to what we're trying to do in Siskiyou County, California. Or if it was just a completely different thing altogether, as far as I'm concerned, the gist of it was they created kind of a rich hippie version of a republic, kind of, sorta.
Well, It either is or it isn't.
Yeah, I think with in terms of, you know, freedom versus statism, that's you're either there or you're not. But I think they're trying to be free and still sound rational to the statists, which may not work for them very well.
Well, as I said earlier before we went on the air, I had a very brief conversation with the elections clerk, and I was informed that the initiative that they drafted and put on the ballot was illegal, and county council was supposed to have stopped it because they had multiple subjects in it, and county council didn't do anything about it. So now, according to a clerk I spoke with, there are some potential lawsuits pending over it.
And, so let me take a moment to, I'll read the summary of this. The initiative measure enacted a community bill of rights for the county of Mendocino. The measure established the legal rights to natural and chemical-free communities and ecosystems, a clean environment, and self-government by the people without manipulation and overwhelming influence from corporations. As a means of attaining these rights, the initiative banned fracking and all related activity, imposing harsh criminal penalties for any violations. The Community Rights Network of Mendocino County was the group behind the initiative. The San Francisco-based organization Global Exchange, a group that assists communities in passing new laws that place the rights of residents over the interests of corporations, aided in organizing the initiative petition drive and in supporting the campaign for the measure. The measure dictated that violators of the fracking ban shall be sentenced to 1 year in county jail and shall pay a fine of $10,000 for each violation. Moreover, it established that, hold on, each time the pump is turned on and each stroke of the pump shall be a separate violation. And violation of each section of this ordinance shall count as a separate violation, resulting in the possibility of extremely harsh criminal penalties for infractions. Wow! Don't fire up that pump.
Well, aside from all that, you heard multiple subjects in there.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Okay. I think this is kind of, I don't want to, these people should have the right to do what they want to do, but I think they missed the idea of freedom part in there, but using force and coercion to get their way.
Tony, yes. go ahead and finish your thought, you know, on the multiple
They did completely ignore allowing the people to vote before they put it on the ballot. In other words, how do you put up a Bill of Rights and you can't do that on an initiative? How do you, it seems to me they went too far too fast. Mm. I don't know. I knew what they're trying to do. They're trying to become self-governing.
Sure.
And they want to eliminate certain things in their county. But, you know, and they have the rights. I mean, if but they got to do it properly. I mean,
Right. So
got to be a nation of laws. We can't be a nation of whims.
So this, it had 67% support.
Wow.
But it could get wiped out. So they just say, this is unlawful. You can't do this.
Yeah, you can't have two things in one initiative petition. So they can't accomplish two things with one thing.
So that's right.
They have to have two separate, and I think every state in the union is like that.
I would imagine that it'd be some corporation will come forward and push that issue.
Well, I'm sure somebody will. In fact, that's what the clerk intimated to me, that that's what was going to happen.
Fascinating. Is anybody wanting to do fracking in Mendocino County?
I do know that there's a lot of oil offshore.
Yeah. I don't know why they'd be doing fracking over there. You'd look. I think you'd look offshore. Doesn't make sense.
Well, that's got to be a hazardous job working out there in the radioactive Pacific Ocean.
That's a whole other issue there. Chuck, so we're ticking down to the last few minutes. You wanted to get into some other material. Do you have time for that?
I just have a couple things to add. I recently heard this, and I have no reason. It was on a Tom Woods podcast, so it's the people that he interviews really know what they're talking about. And he said that in a recent survey, 24% of Americans supported the concept of smaller, decentralized governments established through secession. And I know what Anthony's talking about here, or Tony is talking about here, isn't technically secession, but everybody, anytime you reconfigure your association with the government, that's kind of what the thought that comes in everybody's mind. And that's the term they used. But I think that's what they're talking about is the same thing that he's talking about. So the efforts that he's undertaking and other people around the nation are undertaking are setting brush fires in people's minds. I mean, they're not going out because they're realizing that they're being told the truth about stuff, and they want to go on with that. And then I also wanted to talk about this last thing. There's a great speech that we posted a link in our Facebook page today from Jeff Deist of the Mises Institute. He's the president this year. And he's talking, at the end of the speech, he talked about something that Murray Rothbard used to refer to all the time, a freedom train metaphor. He says the freedom train is for building a movement. It's very simple. If you want more freedom, join us, get on the train. You can get off whenever you like. Maybe you favor 60% of our ideas, or maybe 80% or 90% or whatever. Just join us and go as far as you like and get off when you like. As I said earlier, we are so far from what anyone in this room considers a free society, we should hardly concern ourselves about that now. Let's just get on the train moving in the right direction. And I really like this metaphor. It sure beats endlessly putting ourselves in narrow little boxes. And that's really the truth. I mean, this every day we become more constricted and restricted, and I don't know how many different laws have been passed that I think I probably break laws every day without even, you know, just by breathing. In fact, carbon taxes, I'm sure I do.
I think I broke laws while I was sleeping.
Yeah. And so let's get it turned around. Let's get it started the right way. And when repealing all these laws and restrictions start to make our lives worse, then we can stop. We can get off the train. We can go back down the hill a little bit. But when the train gets to the top of the hill, and we're totally free, we might like that. And I think that's what the ideal is. And it's a pretty tough climb, those last few things. We may not get there, but I know this, as far as that train goes, it's going to be better than where we are now. So if we only get a few things accomplished, it's going to be an improvement.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, you talk about overregulation, the EPA wants to issue a ban on wood-burning stoves.
Yeah.
And that probably people in the Midwest probably don't mind that because there's not a lot of trees growing out there. But when you're surrounded by trees and the wind knocks a bunch of them down every winter, and you go out there and you can cut them up and let them dry in the summer during their hot, dry summer, and you have a great source of inexpensive heat. I mean, gosh, they're basically they're forcing us to buy their the product of their incorporation, yes. Electric corporation that has a kind of a monopoly on the selling of power, energy. So it's, you know, we don't have that alternative choice that we can make where we can go out and produce our own fuel, our own heat, and it doesn't cost us as much. It's, you know, that's the easiest way to avoid taxes is by saving money, because you don't have to pay taxes on the money you save.
That's right.
Well said. Well, there we go. We're at the end of the show. You have been listening to Double Cross Radio on UCY.TV with Drew Lamb, Chuck Horton, and our special guest, Anthony Antiso. We will be back again next Thursday, 7 p.m. One more time with feeling. You're bound to break one more time.